This is Tim O'Brien with O'Reilly News. I recently talked to Henry Liu and Justin Edelson, co-authors of the just-released J. Ruby Cookbook. This cookbook contains targeted recipes for everything from deploying Rails apps to integrating Ruby and Java code directly. It also covers testing strategies and build tools such as Maven and Hudson. This book is published by O'Reilly Media and is currently available for purchase in both print and electronic formats. Just go to O'Reilly.com and search for JRuby Cookbook. This is Henry's first book and Justin's second book. Justin was also the co-author of Java and XML with Brett McLaughlin. Let's listen into this 20-minute interview.
Let's just dive in. You wrote the JRuby Cookbook. The two of you wrote this book. Could you talk to me a little bit about what's in the book and who you think should buy it?
I'll start. The book really covers a variety of facets around using JRuby. I think it was important to us that this not just be a JRuby on Rails book. Ola's book is really good and covers that subject in a fair bit of depth. So we wanted to cover, we certainly talk about Rails, but we wanted to look at the whole JRuby ecosystem and various things that you can do with it. So those range from just using JRuby as a scripting language inside a Java application. There's a whole chapter about GUI applications. We talk about build, deployment, testing, that sort of stuff, as well as obviously covering Rails, which is you couldn't write a Ruby book and not touch on Rails. So we really try to cover a wide gamut of different application types.
Yeah, and just to add something, I think that the general philosophy or the idea behind the book is sort of taking the practices that happen in the Ruby community, like continuous integration and sort of exploring that intersection with, you know, a lot of the common Java practices to and a lot of the common Java software. And I think that's sort of where you're trying to, I think that was the sort of voice they were trying to project out of the book. At least that was what, you know, I was trying to project.
It's more than just, JRuby on Rails book. It talks about how to use JRuby inside of a Java application that already exists.
I think we touch on a few different ways of doing that, from using just the JRuby interpreter directly. We talk a little bit about the Bean scripting framework, as well as the newer JavaX scripting package to really do language level integration. And then we have a number of recipes that are focused around using JRuby to define beans in a Spring container, which is a really nice way of making other parts of your application use JRuby, but they don't necessarily need to know they're interacting with JRuby. So using Spring is sort of a mediator there.
Now, I was talking to Spring CEO, the Spring Source CEO, I think is Rod Johnson, although I'm not sure if he's the CEO or not. He's definitely one of the primary forces behind the company. And we were talking about Groovy and Spring, Groovy and Grails and Spring. And he said that there was less of an impedance mismatch between Groovy and Java, and that there was something of an impedance mismatch between JRuby and Java. Could you talk about that?
Well, I'm not sure exactly what he means. I'll say that I think Henry and I both found that the lack of annotation support in JRuby led to a few problems. And so I could definitely see that because so much of what Spring has been doing in the 2.0, especially in the 2.5 release, has been annotation driven. I could see that being an area of mismatch, whereas Groovy, as of 1.5, has support for annotations. There's nothing preventing you. From JRuby, you have access to the whole of any API in Java. And so there's no real conceptual reason why you can't just new up a Spring application context. That actually, you know, you could have it be a JRuby initializing a Spring application context in which all of the beans are defined in Groovy. That's certainly possible, although we don't go into detail in that in the book.
I think it actually gets more interesting though when you look at some of the sort of flip side is when you have a Spring container, you have a Spring, you're in Spring, and then you can use Ruby to define your controllers or even define the beans. I think that that's sort of the angle that we really explore in the book, and that's really where we see the benefit, because you get that benefit of not having the benefit of the scripted language, where you don't have to compile things. You can just deploy the scripts up into your production environment, and it'll just pick them up right on the fly. So that's sort of the we sort of look at that aspect of the problem more, not really the given a Ruby application using an inversion of control container like Spring in that in your applications.
So if I were working on a Spring MVC front end for an application, I could write one of my controllers in Ruby, and
absolutely.
I can find out. Right. What is involved there? I mean, one of the things that I have always sort of thought is that the reason why people don't get into JRuby is, you know, what has to be on the class path? Is it just a jar file for JRuby? Okay. How do I gain access to, say, something like a gem? Could you talk a bit about that? Just the basic process of integrating JRuby and all of the things that come with Ruby into a JVM.
From the base standpoint, you really just need the JRuby jar. And I'll say this is an area where I think Maven becomes very helpful as a build tool, in that you can just add a dependency to JRuby, and it's on your class path, bundled in your WAR, whatever the deployable unit is. From a gem perspective, the primary way of integrating that is through you basically set some system properties that let the JRuby runtime know where the gem path is. And we talk a lot in the book about the different gem manipulation or management techniques, I should say. There's one use case where if you're using both CRuby and JRuby, you might want to point them to the same gem path. In another context, maybe you want those to be totally separate. And through just manipulation of the command line, you can say install these gems to a shared location or to a sort of private location. And then when you run your Spring application in this case, you would just make sure that you're setting the JRuby home environment variable correctly to point to your gem install location. And for pure Ruby gems that don't have any native code, the same gem works in either environment. Obviously, native code is a different story.
So if you look at something like Ferret, I think Ferret all Ruby, or does Ferret have some C components to it?
Ferret, that's the search engine, the Ruby search engine?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it actually does have C bindings to it. Last time, go ahead.
How do you find a way around that? I mean, is it just the case that there are certain gems that you just aren't going to be using from JRuby? And if so, what's the percentage?
So basically, yeah, if you have gems that have native parts to it, like the, that'll compile in C, then you have a couple options. The most common gems, like, for example, R-Magic, or hprcod, or even Mongrel, they've all have JRuby implementations of it. So the parts that are done in native code have been implemented in Java. So you can install this alternative version of the gem when you're in a JRuby environment. The other option, obviously, is to just do your own porting. You can, you know, dig down in and sort of go through the same task. But yeah, those are probably the two main approaches that you'd take if you had a gem. But and in terms of percentage, I can't quantify that. I have no idea. But the most popular gems, at least, have been moved across, and or are in the process of being moved across.
And there are also a couple examples where, Henry mentioned some of the image manipulation stuff, where I think it's primarily the JRuby team or other volunteers have created API-compatible versions of those gems that instead of using the a native layer, use a Java layer. And especially I think we found that to be the case around image manipulation, where there's a lot of stuff now in the JRE to handle image manipulation. And so all the team has done is really write a wrapper around that that emulates the image science Ruby gem API, for example.
Installing R-Magic in CRuby is something of a pain in the neck. Would you say that it's more or less easy to use the JRuby version?
I think in general it's easier, because obviously you don't have to install the, R-Magic, which depending on your platform can be, difficult. But I think the one problem right now is that they have a lot of the library, and every time they release it, they have more of more compatibility with the C version of R Magic, but it's still lagging a little bit in terms of complete compatibility. So I'm sure that there are a lot of fringe cases out there where there may not be 100% compatibility, but it's definitely improving, and with every version it gets closer and closer, and it's something I think they're obviously working on.
One of the old JRuby blog posts, I think, was by Olavini, and he talked about how you could use JRuby to sort of launch up the J console, and you had more transparency as to what was going on in your application. Could you talk to me about some of the things that are possible in a JRuby app that are not possible in a plain old Ruby app?
I think the stuff that Ola's talking about there around monitoring and manageability is really key. JMX in the Java space is pretty well established, and there's a solid maturity of the ecosystem, things like Hyperic, or even just JConsole and Visual VM, which are now included in the JRE, and the ability to expose sort of arbitrary parts of your application for management is a really nice thing that the Java platform just provides now. I know in the work that Henry and I do, there's historically we've done a lot of monitoring at the system level, free memory, threads used, things like that. And being able to bring monitoring up the application stack and say, how's this cache doing? How many times are people ordering something and then using off-the-shelf tools that know how to speak JMX to graph that is a big win, and something that I think the C Ruby community is a little lagging behind the Java community, just because Java has been sort of enterprise-focused.
I just want to add one more point, and be about the differences. I'm not an expert in this field, and I haven't really tracked the newest developments, but a lot of people sort of look to the threading support, and that's one main difference. Right now, with Java, you have, the VM has evolved so far in 10-plus years or even more in its life, and, you have support for running on multiple cores, and you have the threading model is just a little bit better implemented and a little bit more robust. You have real preemptive multi-threading as opposed to a lot of the earlier Ruby implementations. I think, I'm not sure with 1.9 there may be better support, but I don't know for sure.
Question about the Ruby community. The Ruby community, or I should be more specific, the Rails community was sort of founded with this ethos of anti-Java bigotry. Now, that might be an unfair word to use. Let's just say they had strong feelings against the Java language specifically. How has that changed? Has it changed? Could you talk about some of the places where the communities don't see eye to eye and some of the places where they do?
I guess when I used to go to the early New York City, NYC Ruby meetings, yeah, it was definitely a really interesting crowd, because you had this one side of people in the room who were hardcore Ruby people and never wanted to know Java or learn it ever. And then you had people like myself who had, years and years of Java experience, dying to learn some new technology. And I think it's always been kind of an awkward match, and not necessarily, a perfect kind of marriage in any way. But I don't know. I think that it takes, I think JRuby is sort of that attempt to bridge that gap a little bit and try to have these kind of groups see eye to eye a little bit. But I can't honestly say that I see that much. There isn't like this kumbaya moment where people are just holding hands and coming together. I think that the Ruby people still kind of tend to try to look for their solutions using the Ruby technology and writing their technologies in the Ruby code, using Java when absolutely necessary. But generally, I think still, looking toward Ruby-oriented solutions. And, I don't know exactly how many Java developers are crossing over into Ruby, but probably more and more, hopefully, with the book.
Do you want to comment on this, Justin?
I think what JRuby does is it actually broadens the playing field a little bit for Ruby, in that, as Henry said, especially around Rails, the audience for that has been people who, frankly, in a lot of cases, were just burnt out on Java. And what JRuby has allowed is to bring more Java people into Ruby and create more deployment opportunities. And to me, that's really the biggest area where what JRuby brings to the Ruby language is more deployment opportunities, especially within the enterprise, where things like JBoss or BEA are well-established technologies, And we really are, you know, systems people aren't particularly interested in running Mongrel or other Rails-oriented containers, or Ruby-oriented containers, I should say. And JRuby really allows the broadening of that playing field.
One thing I just have to ask you is, both of you are Java programmers. You would call yourselves Java programmers, I guess, if I forced you to choose a language?
Yeah, I would have to say that. I would probably, I mean, I do a lot of Ruby development, but I think that that in terms of a mindset, yeah, I'm definitely more of a Java developer.
I disagree with the question a little bit. I think we're not, in all seriousness, I don't think that we're language, I don't think of myself, and I frankly don't think of Henry, as a particularly language-oriented developers. I think we're software developers, systems architects at the core, and we're really interested in finding the right tools for the job. I think there are certainly people who are Java developers, and that's when all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. But I think to especially in this environment, you need to be really picky about which tools you use for which job and find solutions to problems. And I think that's what I've tried to do, and in working with Henry, that's what I can see that he's tried to do. So I would disagree a little bit with the characterization that we have to be one or the other. I feel most of my time, you know, in the build and deployment world now. But that's not how I would define myself.
If that were a trick question, I think Justin just got an A+.
Yeah.
But the reason I ask is because it seems like Java has been having an identity crisis for years and years and years. The platform, some could argue that it's healthier than ever. Some could argue that it's on its last leg. But it's clear that Sun has had a problem devoting resources to it. Or at least if you look at something like JavaFX, there have been a series of failed efforts to sort of inject more energy into the platform. Could you talk to me a little bit about whether or not your interest in Ruby is something that is a reaction to that, or is it something that you think would have arose naturally, despite what's happened to the platform?
It's a little hard to say. I think what's happened with Rails has been a recognition that the way that we have been doing development, sort of divorce it from any particular language, but the way that we've been doing development needs to be shooken up a little bit. And that, to me, is what Rails ultimately did. Because at the core of Rails, all of the MVC stuff is nothing particularly new. The big thing, at least that I took away from working with Rails, is the fast turnaround development. You know, looking at that, you said, wow, I really understand how this changes the game. The controllers and all that sort of stuff, that's nothing new. It's the process changes. And so I think Sun is in a position where they need to try to make the language and the platform more agile and more easily adaptable to change.
Do you think that they're succeeding in doing that?
Well, they employ Nutter. I know Henry, and maybe Henry can speak more to this, was really impressed with NetBeans. Not a thing. I have not used NetBeans a lot. Historically, I'm an Eclipse person, and that I will characterize myself as an Eclipse person there. But I think they are making some strides in that direction. I don't really understand JavaFX. I'm not sure where it fits in. I mean, I understand the language. I'm not clear what the strategy is behind that, but they're trying.
Yeah, and I mean, like Justin mentioned, I think that they're doing, I think it's sort of, they got a couple hits, but they also have some, you know, some misses or some, you know, half efforts, I guess. The NetBeans, I think, is one of the definite better areas. The idea is really good. They has great, the feature set is comparable in a lot of ways to Eclipse and to the other popular IDEs. They actually, in some things, they do better in terms of completion of Ruby code, especially for JRuby developers. JavaFX, I worked on a lot of the GUI chapter, so I looked at JavaFX a lot and thought about it in comparison to a lot of the technologies that we talk about in the book. And my takeaway was that what I thought was interesting was the scripting language itself, ultimately, the JavaFX language that you use to sort of create all the logic and define all the actual components. I just thought compared to Ruby or to JRuby at the end of the day was just, it was second rate. And if that's really all the that the technology is bringing to the table, this sort of scripting language, I think that a lot of the alternative techniques that we talk about in the book are much better. I mean, the only issue is a lot of it is tied into Swing, or a lot of the examples we talk about Swing, but there are also newer GUI technologies that are emerging that are using their own sort of drawing toolkits, and accessing them through JRuby can be as good as any JavaFX stack, you know, in my opinion. Not that I've done that much development, but just the what I've looked at and a lot of the examples that I've looked at, it seemed to me that you could do as much or more over in the JRuby plus a toolkit world.
The other big win that I should mention is GlassFish, which I think, especially in the V3, Sun and the GlassFish team have really taken the bloated nature of the J2E container, the Java EE container, and taken that into account and tried to redefine it, which is why you see things like the GlassFish gem, which allow you to run a Rails application in GlassFish in using basically an identical mechanism to the way you would run it with Webbrick or Mongrel. And I know that the Grails team has actually done something similar recently, where they're starting to use use GlassFish in lieu of Jetty as a low-impact servlet container.
I saw an exchange on Twitter between Tim Bray and someone who works for G21 yesterday. I think Tim Bray was asking, you know, why did you switch to GlassFish from Jetty? I didn't hear what the answer is. It seems to be bucking a trend, though. It seems like a lot of people have embraced Jetty over something like Tomcat. Is it just that they need more of the J2EE features?
I can't speak for everyone, but I can say that my perception is that Jetty is used much more in development than in production, and so that may be part of it, is that you desire a development environment that's as close as possible to your production environment. So using something like JBoss or even Tomcat, which is obviously lower impact than, say, JBoss or BEA, in development, if you're going for a rapid turnaround, quick reload of the container, it doesn't quite work as well. Whereas I think the Maven Jetty plugin has done a great job of really speeding up Java development. So I would assume that that's part of it, is that more Grails applications or more JRuby applications are going to be deployed on GlassFish than they would on Jetty.
How did the two of you meet? How did you start working on the book?
I've known Henry for, I think, 5 years now.
Something like that, yeah. Time goes by fast.
Exactly. We work together at MTV Networks, where we both still work. And I'd come in as a software developer and met Henry pretty quickly, and we've sort of worked on and off together over that span of time.
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that I was thinking about an anecdote, and I'll say that the first thing I can really remember talking to Henry about was telling him that the author of the Lemony Snicket books was a member of the Magnetic Fields, and Henry seemed to be unaware of that.
So that was I didn't know that either.
That's the first thing that I think he actually isn't a full member, but sort of a mostly member. I don't know,
and that was sort of a key pivotal moment. That was sort of like
somehow that didn't make it into the book. But
I don't know. I think that we've just always worked closely, but not not ever directly on the same project, I guess. But I don't know. Our technology department's pretty small, and we work pretty closely together. So you know, I've always been aware of Justin, and you know, always respected everything that. You know, if I've heard him speak about something, it always sounded very intelligent. So it wasn't I didn't think twice about working with him. And I did over the years, I've kind of peeked through some of his code, and I saw that his philosophy of design and architecture was very consistent with things that I would work on. And I kind of knew that based on what I'd seen in the past, that it would, you know, I think it would be a good fit for trying something like this.
How did you write the book? Was it in DocBook? Was it in the wiki?
We did it in Word, which I'm not sure I will do again.
And who was the editor? Was it Mike Lukides?
Yeah.
And how was he to work with?
I like Mike a lot. It worked really well. Mike is a great guy to work with from my perspective on a technology book because he actually knows the technology. And so he was always willing to push us to say, you know, what about this? What about that? I can see from a developer's perspective why this is important or why this isn't. He had some really valuable feedback.
Is this a Java book or is this a Ruby book?
It's a million-dollar question.
I think it goes back to what I was saying. I think that it's a little. I don't know. I think we're trying to be a little bit of both, but trying to be its own thing. I think it's useful for both. It's the obvious answer, but I think that Ruby developers who want to sort of learn how to leverage some Java technology to make their jobs easier, I think they can take a lot away from it. And I think that obviously Java developers who want to look at what's going on in the Ruby world and sort of learn some of the agile practices that are happening there and sort of learn some new ways of using their old technology, I think that they'll find that really valuable too.
Yeah, I think, and this will this may not be a popular statement, but I actually think at the end of the day, the two languages, they're not that different. And so my perspective is that somebody who's a Ruby developer is going to get the Java parts. Somebody who's a Java developer is going to get the Ruby parts pretty easily.
You've been listening to an interview with Justin Edelson and Henry Liu, co-authors of the JRuby Cookbook, now available from O'Reilly Media in both print and electronic formats. To purchase this book, go to O'Reilly.com and search for JRuby Cookbook. This has been a production of O'Reilly Media.